So, Sean, over to you.
Thanks, John. I hope you're watching my 15 minutes.
I'll start it now.
I'll stand up and hello, everybody. Shall I sit down there?
No, stand up one second if you help. Take it out. Take it out.
Everybody can hear me okay? So, a very quick introduction for those who don't know me, how I ended up sitting on this table with these much more intelligent, expert people than me. I listened to a colleague of mine at a local newspaper office in a little town called Stafford. Listened, talked to a lady. He sent her away with not much comeback and basically said we weren't interested in what she had to say. Had a chat with him and seemed like an interesting conversation about some poor care in the local hospital. But he wasn't much interested and I was desperate for a story that day. So I rang her back and said, could we start again, were the words I used. That lady was Julie Bailey, and for most of you who follow the Mid-Staff story, you'll know who she is. That was 6 years ago this November coming. So that changed my life. I'm an accidental health journalist now as a result of that. Never wanted to specialise in health, but it's now almost an obsession of mine. So the Mid-Staff story was mine. I ran with it for all those years. I covered the Francis Inquiry, which was an excellent experience, and found myself at the Health Service Journal, which is an excellent place to cover the new look NHS. So John asks a question at the end, it's a big job, can the newsrooms do it? That's a big question, and I'm not sure I know the answer to that, but I know that I'm worried that newsrooms don't have the ability to do that. I haven't been replaced at my old newspaper, which covers a huge section of the West Midland conurbation with huge acute hospitals. So they haven't got the expertise, which is why some of my colleagues still email me now. In fact, I've had a message tonight actually asking if I've got the contact number for a story that's in the media tonight about a former patient at Mid-Staffs who died, and the Health and Safety Executive have just launched a criminal investigation into that. So the repercussions of Mid-Staff still reverberating around the NHS, and following the Francis report, they will do. And given the new system, it's so complex. And at the Health Service Journal, our entire job is to delve into the real detail of that. I mean, we are completely policy geeks at the Health Service Journal. We know the detail of these things quite to scary levels. And it's difficult for us, and it's our job 24/7 really. So if you're in a local newspaper or a freelancer trying to find the stories, it'd be really difficult. The one thing I would say, putting a positive spin on it, we've just had a massive reform and loads of people have lost their jobs, loads of people have moved organisations. All of these new bodies that have been set up, these people are still trying to figure out their own jobs. That's an excellent time to sniff out a story and get someone to say something that they shouldn't really say, but they didn't know that they shouldn't say it, or that they've put something in a board paper, they didn't know they shouldn't put it in the board paper. So that, you know, that there is actually a kind of opportunity for all of us at this particular moment. But you've got to know the organisations, you've got to know how they fit in with each other. And it is a simple system in one sense, because NHS England runs everything. You adopt that rule, you won't really go wrong, and decisions flow down from there, and everything's made in a context of what NHS England dictates to the service in its wonderful mandate that it's issued to the health service. And from there, the efficiency savings come down, and you can trace everything back, and everybody is accountable upwards, and you can always pursue those people for answers and to get them to speak to their own accountability at their level, and if they can't do it, the next level above them should know damn well what the answer is, and you can pursue it like that. That's what we do at the HSJ. Somebody always knows the answer. So that would be sort of a little bit of advice. But all these organisations, the one thing that worries me in this, from the background of Mid-Staffs, is everyone asks me in London at the moment where the next Mid-Staffs will be. I don't know why I'm qualified to answer that question. The reality is it's already happened, because the Francis Inquiry showed that major reform and reorganisation and the lack of finances is the sort of breeding ground for a scandal of care. The race is on now to identify where that where won't say where it is, I don't know, but we'll find out in a few years probably, and we'll trace it back to the confusion and the loss of focus that was caused during the current period that we're in now. And for those of you who have enjoyed the transition period over the last 2 years, prepare yourself, because we'll be doing it again in about 2 or 3 years, because anyone who thinks these are 211 CCGs, anyone who thinks they're going to stay as they are is kidding themselves. If anyone can think back to when PCTs were formed, they very quickly merged in 2006 into larger regional PCTs. We'll see the same with CCGs, and the very simple reason for that is if you are small enough in one region to have a particular illness that can be very expensive, if you have one or two of those, it could ruin your finances as a CCG. So a lot of CCGs are already entering into risk-sharing agreements and forming into sort of small pools. I know this in my old patch, the West Midlands, which I still cover from the Health Service Journal. There's quite a few there have already shared a risk pool, and that is, as far as we're concerned, HSJ possibly a forerunner to a future merger, because they're not sustainable organisations, they're so small, really. So prepare yourself for the next transition. And of course that depends on which government gets in the next election as well. And each government can't help themselves but reform the NHS, which is, Robert Francis has said, is a constant problem for them. One witness in the inquiry called it a perpetual re-disorganisation, which I think was a lovely phrase, and we do see that all the time. So the question for a journalist is, how do we get into that? Board papers are useful, but that's not where the decisions aren't taken in public board meetings. They're taken in the private board meetings that nobody else is there. And so it's all about the detail, really, and it's not an easy answer, and it isn't easy for any journalist to get into the detail of what these organisations are doing. But I wonder how many health correspondents on local newspapers now have the time. I didn't have the time to do it unless I did it, took the board papers home and read them till 2 o'clock in the morning, which I often used to do. So how often are local health correspondents sitting and reading board papers, and not just reading the finance report or the performance report, but how many are reading the audit committee minutes, which are at the very end of the board paper, hidden away? You know, these are hundreds and hundreds of pages documents, but there is little clues in there. The decision won't be there, the story won't be there, clues are there. And from there, you can go and talk to somebody, ask questions. It's a sort of, I think we need to get back to sort of old-fashioned journalism, really, which the question is kind of, are journalists able to do that in a busy newsroom with demand for copy and press releases piling in by the thousands on email, PRs on the phone asking if they'll do this story or that story? That's a real challenge, and I think, if I'm honest, we need some editorial leadership in newsrooms to say, actually, you are our health correspondent and I need you to spend some time reading that board paper. I really hope we've got editors out there doing that. Unfortunately, I know that there are some health correspondents that are having to do church faiths and things like that alongside their correspondent role, which is a real shame, and I don't think we'll get the kind of stories that we need to get if health correspondents are doing that. So my top tip would probably be read everything, speak to everybody, and know everything. And that's the challenge, really. And I failed to do it, as I'm sure all of us do on the timetable, but that really is the, you know, it is about, this job is a vocation, isn't it? We don't all do it 9 to 5 and then put our pens down and forget about it. And I think that's the dedicated health journalists who go out to the extra mile will find the stories. And it'd be the old-fashioned ones who refuse to accept the PR line and refuse to just accept the press office statement. It'll be them that uncover the next big steps, really, and all power to them. But it's whether we've all got the time to do that work, really. So, but I'm happy to answer any questions when the panel's finished, but I think that's my contribution done. For
comfortably inside your 15 minutes. So
thank goodness.
Thank you very much, Sean Linton. Bramman, would you like to? Bramman Jeffries from the BBC.
Well, I need to start with this. One of this.
First of the
disclaimers.